Svet podcastov Bauer Media. Bauer Media.
Welcome everybody. You are listening to podcast about architecture called How I Met My Architect. I'm Peťo Dostal. Usually this podcast is in Slovak language, but thanks to the support of Goethe Institute and Culture Moves Europe, I could be now in Copenhagen, and that's a great opportunity to record some podcast episodes with Danish architects. Previously, I recorded an episode with Rune Boserup from Kobe Architects, and now let me introduce my second guest. Today I'm going to speak with Anders Lonka, one of the founding partners of also really good known Danish studio called Adept. Hi, Anders.
Hi.
That was a long introduction. Let's warm up a little bit because I remember you from the lecture in Bratislava in Slovakia. So I know that you were there a couple of years ago. But let me ask you if you had a time or if you had a chance to at least get some first impression from Slovakia, like a city or people or
Absolutely. No, I think we had a really nice time there. We were together with an employee actually from Bratislava, so we enjoyed kind of getting the full tour of
you mean Michala, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. so that was really nice. I think we met a lot of really nice people, and I think it's a really cool city.
But it was sort of a short trip, right?
So it was short. It's always a bit short, but it was very nice.
When I'm following, following your path, you are sort of a young studio, I would say. Mm-hmm. Okay, but today you have 70 plus employees, which is like really fast grow. Mm. So let me start with the question: how did your professional role changed?
I think in so many ways. When we just started out, we were just the three of us. I started the office with two great friends that I knew back from high school, actually. Mm. So we met when we were around 15. And then we studied together. And while we were studying, we also lived in different cities together. And then we more or less just coming out of school, we started the office. So in the beginning, we had no projects. We had no employees. We were just the three of us sitting down and doing open competitions. And I think this is maybe the office we are in now is maybe our office number 6 or 7, because we've moved so many times and we've grown or we found a better place, mainly because we've grown out of the places we've been in. And I mean, today it's a very different situation. We've actually tried to really focus on the fact that we started the office because we love doing architecture, not because we necessarily love selling architecture or because we love running a business. So we have a great CEO, Camilla, who is taking care of all the administrations. He has a team of 5-6 people, and we have a great, actually, fourth partner called Simon, who's doing all the business development with a good team as well. Mm-hmm. So the three, me, Martin, we try to stay with the projects. So we're still very project involved.
So you just design?
We try to, of course. It's like, it's not that simple, but we've tried to stay in the projects. But of course now we are running a lot of projects, so we can't be like drawing literally the projects, but we do still sketch a lot and have a lot of internal project meetings about how to develop. Mm-hmm. So when we do a project in the office, it's always led by one of the founding partners.
Okay.
So it's never, we don't have this secondary layer.
So how many, give me an example. How many projects is under you?
I think maybe 15, 10, 15.
That's a lot, actually.
It's a lot, and it depends on in which phase it is. I'm mostly involved in the kind of first phases, competition, and then the first phases of the detailing if we win.
Okay, so let me ask you, what is the hardest part for you now in your job?
The hardest part, as a partner, you, or at least I think all of us, we are experiencing the most challenges when we change size.
Because
if we get a few extra projects and we don't have enough staff, we have to hire staff at the same time, approve contracts and at the same time be kind of understaffed everywhere. Mm-hmm. So then it all falls on us in the end. So those are the hard times. When it's kind of steady sailing,
okay,
then there's like a flow that we know and we can control. But
okay,
when the office is changing size, actually both if we are shrinking a little bit, but mainly luckily mm-hmm. it's been growing, then it's always a bit challenging.
Okay, but you are answering with we. So I would like to ask you a little bit more about you.
Yeah, but maybe I'm trying to say we, but meaning myself. At least that's what I find the most challenging.
Yeah.
For example, I mean, we were lucky to win a few competitions here in the early spring,
mm-hmm.
and that means more projects. Or I was lucky to do that, but we don't have the full staff, so I have to hire new people while I try to kind of control the start of these projects, and then it always becomes a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. But you never
on my
know.
Shoulders.
But you never know if it will start and when.
No.
And sometimes you just hire new people and you are under pressure that if you have work for them and you don't see the beginning of the project.
That's
and
true.
This is sort of a loop.
It is a bit of a challenging loop. I think we also kind of now getting the experience and the size where we hire a bit more strategically. For example, if we get a really good application, we might hire the person without having the project now, because we can just see, okay, mm-hmm. we will probably grow a little bit mm-hmm. in the coming time. Mm-hmm. And we do that a bit more. We can see, okay, we're actually really missing this type of architect. So we need to hire that person, even though we might not have the project yet.
Let me connect with the people question, because you are still really young and you have a lot of people surrounded or a lot of employees. How many employees do you have who are older than you? Because that could be the question, because sometimes we are struggling with sort of a respect, you know, or they are struggling with a respect because you are young and they are experienced and skilled and everything, sort of older.
Yeah.
Do you have any? I'm sure you have.
Yeah, we have a lot of people that are older than us. I think we try to have a culture that is not so much about hierarchy. And we try to have kind of very one-to-one discussions with all employees.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't had the kind of feeling that it's a challenge that with kind of respect or with hierarchy in our office, honestly.
Okay. And do you know everybody?
Yeah. Of course, not personally everybody. Usually we work with kind of teams.
Yes.
And the teams would usually have a project leader. And that project leader, I would have more discussion with than with, of course, the entire team.
Mm-hmm.
And those are usually also the employee who's been with us the longest. So those are the employees I know the best, for sure.
For sure.
but I know a little bit about everybody, I would say.
Okay. Because there is also a lot of interns, I guess, who are like rotating.
Yeah, not so many. Tough. We only have 5-6 per semester, so we don't. It's less than 10%.
Mm-hmm. And are they Danish, or you have also the international?
We also have international. They are not even half are Danish, mostly international. But that also goes for our mm-hmm. employees. I mean, we have most of our work is outside of Denmark, so a big part of it in Germany, but most of it is outside. So most of the internal discussion and also actually a big part of the external discussions are not in Danish. So there are, of course, Danish projects where we do need to staff with Danish people, but there's also German projects where we need German people, and we have a lot of projects right now in the Czech Republic where we need.
I know.
Czech
I have
people.
A question for you about that.
So I think it's quite international mm-hmm. in the office.
So let me ask you about this, like designing abroad projects. Just very general question. Let me ask you why you have decided to to design abroad, because it's always a tough decision. Mm-hmm. Because you don't know the context, you don't know the culture, you don't know the technical norms, and you need to travel a lot, I guess. So it's always a tough decision. So why did you decide to design to those countries?
I think there's a lot of answers on that. I think that one thing is that Denmark is quite a small country. It's only 5-6 million.
So a lot of opportunities.
there are a lot of opportunities. But for example, compared to Germany, it's a very different and a very different scale market. Mm. But I think also due to the fact that Denmark is not a huge market, and we've always had a big focus on architecture and design. So it's almost been a tradition in Denmark that most, or at least a lot of the offices in Denmark would try to get work abroad, and would try to also focus on not only Denmark. So it didn't feel like a big decision taking it. But also there are some of the, I would say there is like a tendency in Denmark, especially at the moment, that when they do competitions, to get into the competitions, you need to have done a lot of similar projects as the competition is, for example, a school. They would ask for 1 to 2 schools built within the last 5 years, which is a bit of a catch-22 for a young office. Because, okay. I mean, if you haven't built a school, you don't get into it.
And that's true.
And that's, for example, in Germany, very different. They don't do it like that at all. So it's much more kind of, it's harder competition because you're usually against 15 to 20 competitors. Mm-hmm. In Germany, in Denmark, it's only 3 to 5, mm-hmm. usually. But they're also much more open. For example, the we're building now a museum in Berlin of around 7,000 square meters. The competition to get into that, we would never have been able to do that in Denmark, because that was the first, you would say, museum that we won.
Uh-huh, okay.
And in Denmark, you don't get into a museum competition without having built a few. Mm-hmm. Already.
Yeah, and you don't have a chance to get a chance.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a catch-22, some of these things in Denmark. And that's why we started looking at other markets as well. By now, we really enjoy being an international office and having not only but Danish people in the office and yeah, having okay. projects in cities like Berlin and Prague and Hamburg and that has like a different culture and a different scale and all these things. So I think that's actually, at least speaking for myself, mm-hmm. that's something I really, really enjoy. I recently won a competition in Central Park in Prague 1, the kind of historical city.
Yeah. Miloš Forman Square.
Exactly. And that's such an exciting project to do. And coming into that context, which is very different from Copenhagen, it's much more kind of bound to history. And there's so many extraordinary kind of public spaces. And being able to do a project there is so much fun.
Yeah, I was following this competition. So I have a question for you. Since you mentioned the second time, let me ask you very honestly, why do you think that you have won the competition? Because when I checked the final results, you could see like the 3 final submissions.
Yeah.
You were included. They are really similar, like a lot of trees, really good quality of the public space, nice steep surface with greenery, some amenities inside. So I would say really, really similar designs. Yeah. Why do you think that you won?
Of course, the jury is the best to ask in the end about that. But I mean, I have a feeling that our reading of the qualities in Prague 1 and the context of Prague 1 was slightly more in depth maybe than the 2 other proposals. So we're down to, I think, the way that we're translating the patterns of the beautiful mosaic landscape that you have in Prague 1 into the new patterns of the competition and how we're using this character to create these different surfaces. And then, of course, a big discussion there was also kind of how do you mitigate climate change with kind of a project that relates to the fact that Prague 1 and Prague in general becomes really hot during the summer, while at the same time you have a kind of UNESCO World Heritage inner city that is maybe traditionally really based on kind of public space, road, and park, and those three being very different kind of, how do you say, like public spaces with different programmatic elements. So for example, the way we would introduce greenery into the plaza, we tried to make that in a way that it wasn't very different from a park, but still had the effect of mitigating this kind of heat island effect that you have in Prague at the moment. So it was in these kind of, I think, little things, because I think, yeah, as you said, there was over 200 people applying for the competition, and the final six projects were all really great projects. So I guess it's probably also, you know.
But do you feel that you have to travel a lot when you are designing abroad?
Yeah, I mean, we do have to travel. But of course, also when we have now an office in Hamburg, and a lot of our projects are in Germany, most of the traveling is also being done by people that are in Hamburg around Germany.
For sure, local architects.
Local architects and project leaders. And of course, also when we have the office of this size, it's no longer just you know, and me that are traveling. So we are kind of spreading it out on everybody. And these kind of more kind of teams based times, I think it's not too bad. Honestly, before COVID, it was maybe becoming a bit too much.
Yeah, but COVID learned us that it's possible.
Now you don't have to have all meetings in person. Now you can do, I mean, I was in Prague last week, but then there's going to be a few weeks till I go again, and we can take the in-between meetings over Teams.
And mostly in these like first starting phases, I think that you have to be there, like not in person, but you have to be there.
I mean, we always go when we get a new project. We never do it just without seeing, you know, we always go, even though there's no site visit. So we would always push the team to go there. You would say also why we are at the moment not, you know, working a lot in Canada or in Australia, or so we are trying to limit ourselves to Europe mainly, but because I mean, maybe one day, but it is that's been
okay.
We've had a few approaches, but we've had so far we've said okay, we have to maybe consolidate ourselves a little bit in Europe first. But it's a long travel.
But the question is, when you are visiting a site, as you mentioned, do you visit a site before you make a competition, or when you win a competition?
No, I mean general, during the competition. But for example, in Germany, it's always part of a competition. So every German competition we would do, there's always a site visit and a collegium where you have to show up in most of them, not all of them, but we always go and see the site. And I think it's important. I think there's so many nuances in the way you read a context it's hard to do it over Teams.
Could you summarize it for me when we are talking about the international office? You grow up like this. What is the hardest part to have the international office compared to the like Danish office?
Probably the fact that running a Danish office with the collective agreements are quite expensive compared to a lot of markets. So we are the fees that we need to deliver the same amount of employees, you would say, that you have both in Germany and also in Czech a bit higher, so it can be hard to make you have to have special projects, and you have to have clients that are willing to invest a little bit in also having an architect who's not locally. I mean, usually we do also work with local architects to an extent within the projects, so it's not that we do everything, but even doing a part of the work can be a bit challenging with the cost sometimes. Danish architects are paid quite a lot compared to to some other European countries at least.
Let me ask you about the competitions. What is the ratio competitions versus real projects in your studio, like approximately?
The projects that we built, by far most of them are from competitions.
Okay.
So the way we get work is generally from competitions. We do have some direct clients once in a while, but most of it is from competition. Also because the type of work we do is very related to cultural projects or educational projects or kind of project types like that are usually by EU regulation due to be tendered. So in that sense, it's close to being, I would say, like 80-90% of our work comes
really?
From competitions.
That's really a lot.
Yeah.
Because it brings a lot of risk, I would say, because after you will lose 10 competitions.
Yeah.
You just have to win something.
Yeah. You have to beat the odds of the normal competitions to do it like that.
Okay.
That is a bit challenging, but of course, and due to that, we can take smaller projects once in a while, but it's usually kind of more. It's usually something where we know from the beginning, okay, even if we win this competition, it's not gonna be a great, it's not gonna be a great
to win
kind
a
of process. Yeah, because we have to spend so much time to win the competition that if the fee is not big because the project is not big afterwards,
mm-hmm.
it's hard to get a return. But that's okay once in a while.
And what about the idea? Let me ask you in a funny way. What about the approach to just get the second place? Get rid of a responsibility to win it and build it and
get
the money.
Go for the win. We always go for the win.
That's what everybody says.
No. That's. I think we started the office because we wanted to do a specific type of architecture and we wanted to promote that. We didn't start it to make a lot of money or to have mm-hmm. to be business leaders in that sense. So mm-hmm. it's still I think it's still very much with kind of the heart that we're doing the projects we do, not necessarily with kind of the smartest business decision always.
Yeah, of course. I can relate to that. But the question for me could be that was there sort of a breaking point when you guys, like a studio, started to be successful in this approach? Because at the beginning you are just struggling when you say no to the clients because you don't want to build the projects which you don't have the value as you see, or cultural projects because you have nothing to build.
Getting projects in the beginning is hard because you have no references and it's not easy to go anywhere, and especially with this Danish catch-22.
Yeah, so was there a breaking point?
I think there's been a lot of small breaking points in a way. We started in 2006, just before the financial crisis in 2008 hit.
Mm-hmm.
So before 2008, we managed to win like two or three big open competitions, quite a big, actually, high-rise project here in Copenhagen. And we won a huge art and architecture school in Reykjavik. The high-rise project here in Copenhagen that was together with a developer. So when the financial crisis hit, that kind of got killed quite fast, and we were like, okay, yeah, this is what happens, you know, there's a financial crisis, it's almost expected. But the School of Architecture in Reykjavik was for the Icelandic state, so we were like, okay, but the school, at least that will happen, it's for a country, you know, a country can't go bankrupt. And then 2 weeks after, Iceland went bankrupt as the first country in the world to do that. And that was of course a bit devastating for us. But I think in Denmark you have a kind of a state art foundation, which once a year gives out a working grant for one or two artists. And I think maybe they had noticed that we had won these big projects and that they were crest. So they gave us actually a 3-year working grant.
Really?
So they would pay. We only had one salary to share, but then we had at least one salary to share, me, Martin, and Martin.
Okay.
And that was definitely a breaking point, because that made it possible for us, because we were straight out of school. We were fine. We can easily share one salary. Mm-hmm. We didn't have a lot of expenses, so that was fine. And then we could also, of course, make a little bit of money on the office.
Mm-hmm.
So that was definitely a breaking point that made it possible for us to spend 3 years really building a more kind of solid base for the mm-hmm. company. But I think maybe the last 5-10 years where we've really opened maybe also more of the international markets, and I think we've got a more established name here in Denmark. That's where we've grown quite a lot as an office. Mm-hmm. Maybe mm-hmm. I think maybe 5 years ago we were probably around half the size that we are now.
Yeah.
So I think the last 5 years has been quite mm-hmm. quite fast.
So in terms of the business model, as yeah. We were talking about the competitions, those are the business model, the first phases of the projects.
No, but I mean, there's also a lot of projects that we detail all the way to the end. Everything in Germany or Denmark, we detail in all phases.
Like also construction phase and details and everything.
Yeah, yeah. In Denmark, at least, the construction company leads the construction phase. So it's not the architect that leads the construction yeah. side, okay. but okay. you do site supervision, mm-hmm. of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, doing all the detailed drawings and doing all the construction drawings is something we've done. We do for everything in Denmark and Germany.
Hi, guys. Unfortunately, according to some technical issue, the second half of the podcast with Anders Lonka was not recorded. I'm really sorry. I don't know what happened, but sometimes that happens. I will do my best to avoid this situation for the future. Thank you very much for your understanding, and see you in the next episode.